Welcome to Life's a Bicycle, how to balance your life like you balance a bike. Our presenter is Sharon Barnes. She helps people release their creativity to become fully alive and realize their dreams. Sharon has a master's degree in social work and is a licensed clinical social worker in Colorado. Let's listen now as she guides us through the wilderness of inner territory to destinations of delight.
I wonder if there's anybody here that feels overwhelmed with too many demands on their time and energy. Anybody here know anybody like that? Anybody here suffer from compassion fatigue, taking care of everybody else but not themselves? Anybody feel frazzled from being tugged in too many directions at once? Or anybody here do the work that two or three people used to do at your job? Without a raise, yes. I've been laid off, and I've been left behind when other people were laid off, and I don't know which is better or which is worse. They both have their drawbacks. So that's why we're here to talk about life's a bicycle. Who here knows how to ride a bike, or did know how to ride a bike at one point in their lives? Exactly. We all know how to ride a bike in this country. Anybody here ever fall on a bike? Lose their balance on a bike? Anybody here get back on their bike and ride some more? All right. You know how to balance a bike. So I'm really not here to tell you anything new, because I believe if you can balance a bicycle, you can balance your life. I would like to spark your imagination and your own thought process about what it takes to balance a bicycle, and therefore what it takes to balance your life. I would like you, when you leave here, to be able to, when you see somebody riding a bike, or when you ride a bike, or when you drive by a bike store, be prompted in your memory about balance, and about balancing your life, and balancing a bicycle, balancing your life. Have that be a memory cue for you from now on, for the rest of your life. So how's your ride? Smooth? Bumpy? Got a flat? How's your ride been? Anybody have bumps in their path, in their life path recently? Well, there's something about riding a bicycle that the balance there is different. We can talk about balance with a balance scale, but there's lots of different kinds of balance. But something that is specific to balancing a bicycle is that it's a dynamic balance. There's movement, and you're going somewhere. And I think that's very helpful in terms of thinking about how to balance our lives. It's not, balancing our life isn't a one-time thing, and we get it that way and it stays. No, it's an ongoing process, just like riding a bicycle. Balancing a bicycle is an ongoing process. So there's constant movement and there's constant change. The path that we're riding on varies. You never know. I mean, we had to be flexible tonight in terms of starting our seminar. The traffic varies. I know someone who was who used to work at Porter Hospital and lived in the mountains, and he rode his bicycle back and forth to work that 20, 25 miles every day. One day he got clipped riding on 285, tumbled. He was in the hospital for quite a while. You never know what the traffic is going to be and what it's going to do to you. Our own health and our body condition varies, and it affects our ride on a bicycle. It affects our life. And sometimes we get caught and pulled off our feet by what happens to our bodies. The weather can affect our life and can affect a bike ride particularly. In our life, the weather can be the literal weather, but weather is kind of like our emotions, and we'll be talking to that about that more later. So there's lots of similarities between riding a bicycle and balancing our lives. The rider's condition and the path we're on all go into that. What does it take to balance a bicycle? Well, as I've thought about it, there's three things that come to mind. One is tune in. You got to pay attention to what's going on inside of you and around you. So you got to tune in. It also pays to tune up. Anybody ridden a bicycle that needed to be tuned up and wished they hadn't? Anybody not pay attention to taking care of their body and wish they had taken care of their body better? Lots of similarities there. And then a bicycle is all about taking off, going somewhere. And life is about going somewhere, doing something with our lives. So those are the three things we're going to be talking about tonight. Tune in, tune up, and take off. Well, how can you tell what it's going to be a rotten day? Well, one is you wake up face down on the pavement. Or for a woman, you put your bra on backward and it fits better. You turn on the news and they're giving escape routes out of the city. Your twin sister forgot your birthday. You put both contacts in the same eye. You call your answering service and they tell you it's none of your business. You wake up and your braces are locked together. Well, hopefully nobody experienced those kinds of things today. What kind of bumps did you experience? Anybody here have traffic? Deadlines? Too much to do? Too little time or energy? Too little money? Anybody have a sick child, spouse, boss, employee cause them trouble? How about a grumpy child, spouse, boss, employee? How about other people's expectations? Anybody here have to deal with other people's expectations today? How about your own expectations that you didn't meet? We certainly had to deal with that in getting started here tonight. Anybody have miscommunications? Yes, Stephen's raising his hand. If we'd have given him better directions, he'd have gotten here a lot sooner. Well, for some of you, it's helpful to write things down, and so we've provided some space for that. If you want to write down some of the bumps that you've experienced this week or this last year, this would be a good time to do it. If you don't, you know, that's great too. So what happens when your bike gets out of balance? Anybody? What happens when a bike is out of balance? You could fall. You could crash.
Your whole momentum changes.
Your whole momentum changes.
Any of the momentum you had when it was tuned up and working together.
Right. So the momentum gets interrupted, interfered with. Anything else? What else happens when your bike is out of balance?
You decide not to go for the ride.
You decide not to go for the ride at all. So you can work harder for the same or less results. Can it be so much harder that it's not worth it at all? In our bodies, there are many short-term and long-term effects of stress, and I want to talk about those separately. Short-term effects of stress include increased concentration, increased endorphins to block the pain. We get a second win if we keep going long enough. We get increased fuel and increased oxygen for fast action. We get increased energy and strength, decreased allergic reactions. The blood is diverted to the muscles, again, for fast action, which slows down or stops the digestion. Blood sugar drops. There's a decreased sex drive. There's increased white and red blood cells and faster clotting in case you might bleed. So the body has all these automatic reactions. And Dr. Adam can probably correct me. I probably forgot a lot of them, but there's a small list of what happens in the short term when we get stressed. And except for one of these, no wonder we get addicted to it. The endorphins, the energy, the rush, and some people are addicted to adrenaline. Which ones do you experience in your life? There's a list in your handout if you want. And it may be helpful for you to circle which ones you experience and check the ones you experience the most. But if you keep getting stress or having stress and it's unrelenting stress and it just keeps on going and going and going, there's different kinds of effects in the body. And there's a list in your handouts of that as well. The long-term effects of unrelenting stress. We have decreased concentration and that leads to an increased error rate. We find ourselves making mistakes all the time. Endorphins go down, not up. In the beginning they went up, now they go down, so we have an increased sensitivity to pain. We experience weight changes many times. Most people respond to stress in terms of an increase or decrease in appetite. We're usually affected one way or the other. There's an intolerance to heat or cold, increased chance of high blood pressure, and the list goes on and on and on. Interestingly enough, decreased sex drive is on both the short-term and the long-term list. Which of these are you experiencing in your life? There's a place, again, for you to circle and the ones that you're experiencing, if you are, and to check the ones that you have the most. It's probably more information than you wanted, right? What I don't know can't hurt me. Well, unfortunately, that's not true. Most of us, or many of us, were raised with what I call monkey business. Anybody here, when they were a kid, heard about the three little monkeys? Hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil? They have a place for young children. Unfortunately, many times, we don't leave behind the childhood things as we grow up, and we take those along with us. And I would suggest that we need to stop the monkey business and we need to start some monkey magic. Monkey magic is see what there is to see, hear what there is to hear, feel what it is that you really feel, think your own thoughts, say what needs to be said, say what you need to say, do what you need to do, be who you are meant to be. Not who somebody else thinks you should be, or who you think somebody else thinks you should be, but be who you are really meant to be in life. Remember Pete's dragon? We're going back to kindergarten here, okay? Pete had a dragon. It's a children's storybook about Pete and his dragon. Is anybody here familiar with it? Well, Pete was a preschool boy, and he woke up one morning and he could not believe what he saw. And he rubbed his eyes and looked again. There's a dragon sitting on the foot of his bed. But there's no such thing as a dragon. So he just looked at kind of one eye and went in the bathroom and hoped when he came back that it wouldn't be there. But he came back and it was there. Only it had been kitten size before and now it's puppy size. So he gets dressed, all the while keeping one eye on this dragon that's on his bed, that there is no such thing as a dragon, so there really can't be one there, but it is there, and he just keeps watching it while he gets dressed, but he doesn't know what to say, so he doesn't say anything because there is no such thing as a dragon. Well, he goes downstairs for breakfast, and the dragon follows him down the stairs, and by the time he gets in the kitchen, this dragon is large dog size. But he doesn't say anything. Mom looks. There's Pete. Good morning, Pete. How are you this morning, Pete? We got pancakes this morning for breakfast. And he's all excited and he's all happy. And so he sits down to eat pancakes. But the dragon jumps up on the table. But nobody does anything because there is no such thing as a dragon. Mom puts pancakes on Pete's plate and the dragon picks them up and eats them. Well, what is Pete going to do for breakfast? So Mom keeps making pancakes. The dragon keeps eating them. Nobody does anything, nobody says anything, because there is no such thing as a dragon. Mom ran out of batter. Now what was he going to do? So she went in the refrigerator and she found an apple and that's what he had for breakfast. Well, the dragon, so with no more food, jumped down off the table and went wandering off for something else to do. And as he went through the door into the living room, he took some of the molding off the door because he was getting so big that he couldn't get through the doorway. Well, the morning goes on like this. And by that time, the dragon was so big, he carried off the house. A bread truck, delivery truck came by, and the dragon smelled the bread in the bread truck and went following the bread truck, and the house was just riding on the dragon's back as they went down the road. And the dragon knocked over the bread truck, pulled out bread, and sat down and started munching. Well, Dad comes home for lunch. You can tell this is a very old story. And there's no house. So he starts driving down the street. There's a foundation there. Where's his house? What could this be? Well, he finds the bread truck on its side, the dragon sitting there munching happily on his loaves of bread. And so Dad stops the car, and he gets out, and he looks at the dragon, and he said, "Bad dragon, you take my house back where it belongs." Dragon looks at him, gets up, trots off, goes, sits down on the foundation, and as he does, he shrinks back down in size. and the house settles on its foundation and everything is back the way it's supposed to be, while Mom and Pete ride in the window of the house. So what's the moral, what's the lesson in that story? If you ignore a dragon, you grow a dragon. To tame a dragon, name the dragon and take charge of it. So remember Pete's dragon. Do you have any dragons in your life? There's a place in your handout. If you think of one, if one or more comes to mind, you can jot that down in your handout. So let me repeat that. If you ignore a dragon, you grow a dragon. To tame a dragon, name the dragon and take charge of it. So remember Pete's dragon. So there's three ways to check for the source of trouble when your bike is out of balance or when your life is out of balance. And we're still in kindergarten. These three ways, I'm sure you learned in kindergarten or before, they are stop, look, and listen. Yes. It's really simple. You already know how to balance your life. I just hope to remind you of some of these things and give you a hook to hang it on. Stopping is go slow to go fast, really. The biggest mistake that people make when their life is out of balance is to ignore it, to just keep on going, keep on trucking, pretending that everything is fine and wonderful when it's not. There is a time in life when it is helpful to fake it till you make it kind of thing. But when your life is really out of balance, you need to pay attention. And you need to stop and look and listen. Back to the monkeys that we talked about. See what there is to see. Hear what there is to hear. Pay attention. And listening involves listening not just to what's going on out there in the world, but what's going on inside. Listen to the inner ear. We need to sort out what's going on in our head. We need to sort out the static from what's important. And we need to sort out the voices. And yeah, we all hear voices. It doesn't mean we're schizophrenic. It just means that we have different aspects of ourselves that it's like a committee sitting around a table. And we need to listen to all the parts of ourselves and identify, who is this that's speaking right now? Is this the 4-year-old part of me that gets scared easy? Is this the 9-year-old part of me who's really unrealistic about what can be done in a day? Is this the 16-year-old part of me that has this romantic, idealistic view of life? What part of me is this? Or is this the wise old woman that is speaking to me from wisdom beyond my own years? What part of me is this? And we need to sort out these voices and listen to what's going on inside. The Serenity Prayer is really helpful to me, and I don't know if it would be helpful to you. I'm sure many of you know it. God grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, to change the things I can, and to have the wisdom to know the difference. One day a farmer's donkey fell down into a well. The animal cried piteously for hours and hours. The farmer tried to figure out what was he going to do. Well, finally, he thought and thought, and he decided, you know what, this is an old donkey. He's no good for doing anything on my farm. The well needed to be covered up anyway. So he went out and recruited all his neighbors to come in and shovel dirt in on this donkey. Well, the donkey started to figure out what was going on, and his cries just increased. And then they stopped. And it wasn't that he was covered up with dirt. It was that he'd figured out something. And he'd tried something and had worked. And as they shoveled dirt on him, he began to shake the dirt off and to take a step up. Some of you have heard the story. And as they kept shoveling, he kept shaking the dirt off and taking a step up. it began to dawn on the farmer that the donkey was quiet and that the donkey was not getting buried under the dirt. And he also began to notice what was happening. And he would watch. The dirt hit the donkey's back. The donkey would shake the dirt off, and he would take a step up. And before long, he walked right out of what had been this deep well. We, like the donkey, get a lot of dirt, and sometimes worse, shoveled on us or dropped on us. And we, like the donkey, can get out of the deepest wells, the deepest holes that we find ourselves fallen in by shaking off the dirt and taking a step up. Taking the things that come our way that either are intended as harm or that feel to us as though they are intended as harm when there's no intention behind them at all. But we also can get out of any deep hole in life by shaking off the dirt and taking a step up. So how do we know when a bike is out of balance? Some of you who ride bicycles, tell me, what goes on with a bicycle that lets you know it's out of balance?
It wobbles.
It wobbles. It makes noise. The chain can come undone.
Tires flat.
Tires flat. All kinds of ways that a bicycle can let you know that things are out of balance. Well, what about our lives? How do we know when our lives are out of balance? What are some of the signs that our lives are out of balance? Anybody here ever get irritable? Anybody here ever irritable for days at a time, weeks at a time, months at a time? How about anxiety or depression or fatigue? And I'm talking unrelenting fatigue, fatigue where you just feel like you're dragging a 10-ton weight behind you all the time. How about can't concentrate, can't make decisions, can't focus? It's interesting, the word disease is really dis-ease put together. So our bodies are not at ease within themselves. In Chinese medicine, they talk about our organs or our systems in our body being not happy. In Western medicine, we talk about things working. But in Chinese medicine, it's about whether they're happy or not. It's a whole different level of balance there that's possible. How about sleep disruptions, changes? Those are very common, but when they go on for weeks or months at a time, we really need to pay attention. And again, appetite, eating, weight changes. Overwhelming emotions, when we find that we are just giddy all the time, or we cry at the drop of a hat or at nothing, and we don't know why we're feeling the way we're feeling or what's going on. When we find that our lives are just in chaos, out of control, just it's like we feel like we're on a merry-go-round that keeps going faster and faster. There's an increase in mistakes or accidents. I mean, we could go on and on and on, but these are some of the basic ones. So what are the prime times for imbalances to occur? When is it most likely that you're going to get out of balance on your bike? Anybody here ride a bike can tell me what's most likely? What do you have to watch for, pay attention for?
Sharp turns.
Sharp turns, changes in the road ahead.
Tiredness,
your own physical body condition.
Pebbles and rocks in the road.
These are all great metaphors for life and for what gets us out of balance in life. A number of years ago, there was some research done at the University of Oregon about the relationship between stressful life events and illness. And they came up with this stress rating scale, and that's actually the purple sheet that you checked off in the beginning came from them. And they found that they came up with this scoring by how stressful these kinds of events were for people. Marriage is on there, pretty high on the list. Divorce is on there, but not much higher than marriage. Job changes. Change of residence, change of family size, increase, decrease, either one. And then if you're at the stage of life I'm in, you get an increase or decrease you know, on a weekend or every other week or what. I mean, college-age kids are just coming and going all the time. Those kinds of things you do have to adjust to and do cause stress. Illness, either one's own illness or illness in our families or other people close to us. Death in the family. The number one top stressor on the list, it was death of a beloved spouse. Loss of job, financial difficulties, any life transaction or transition, even promotions and sought-after changes are on that list as being stressful. Also, I'd like to add to the list times of significant unresolved value conflicts, times of persistent frustration, and times of ongoing unsatisfactory results. All of these are very stressful. And any experience that is called leg lifting. And I'd like us all to do an exercise. Now, I know some of you have some physical limitations and may not, and there may be somebody who just wants to watch, and that's okay too. But for those of you who would like a participatory experience, I'd like you to put your papers down and stand up and pair up with someone next to you, behind you, or in front of you. Or you can do three people. I'd like a volunteer, if I could, to have one person volunteer to come up here. Okay. All right, and what we're going to do is we are going to push each other. Okay? We're going to take turns, so I want you to push me. See if you can push me over. Okay, see, she's pushing me. So take turns pushing, those of you who want, or you can just watch. All right, now you push back the other way. All right. Now go back to the first person. And the first person who got pushed, take 1 foot off the floor. Now push. All right, now switch. All right, now give yourselves a hand. Thank you very much. Thank you, and thank you, Amira, for volunteering. What was it like to be pushed with both feet on the floor? Piece of cake, nothing to it, no big deal. What was it like to be pushed with 1 foot off the ground? Didn't take anything at all. In fact, for some of us, it's hard to stay standing with 1 foot off the ground. Anything in life that lifts your leg is stressful. Anything in life that helps lower your leg is balancing. So if you remember only one thing from tonight, maybe that would be a thing that could be helpful. Anything that lifts your leg is stressful and unbalancing. Anything that helps you lower that leg is balancing. So if you get off balance, think about a bicycle, think about your leg. What lifts it? What helps you put it on the ground? Or what pulls your feet out from under you? Sometimes we get big stressors that come suddenly in life and we feel like we've had our legs pulled out from under us. And we have to find a way to get our feet back under us. Well, when that happens, what are some simple, easy, quick things? We're going to talk about life strategies also, but I want to give you just some simple, quick things that you can do anywhere, anytime, to help rebalance your life. And it's interesting, I was talking with Dr. Adam on the phone this afternoon, and the very first one I'm going to mention, he said to me, he said, "Sharon, you need to do this. Breathe." What is the first thing we do when something stressful happens? We tense up and hold our breath. So what is the first thing we need to do to balance our lives? We need to breathe. Deep breath. We need to breathe from down here, from our abdomen, not just up here in our upper chest. We need to breathe deep breaths. Dr. Andrew Weil, the wellness doctor, says that in order to reset the central nervous system, all it takes is a cycle of deep breathing. Actually, it's four repetitive cycles of deep breathing. You breathe in to a count of four, hold your breath for seven, and then out for eight. And then do that four times over, and that resets your central nervous system. And you know, when I do that, I find that it really works. In for four, hold for seven, out for eight. So the first thing, simple, easy, quick thing to do is to breathe deeply. Second one is to find something to be thankful for or thankful about. There is something about gratitude that turns negative energy into positive energy. And I found a quote, but I don't know who said it, that there is no circumstance so small or large that is not susceptible to the power of gratitude. Gratitude is like a turtle who's upside down, finding a way to right himself or herself, getting its feet back on the ground. Gratitude somehow balances us on the inside in a way that very few other things have. Then I have two more, almost anywheres, bonus items. First one of those is to stretch. Stretch physically. We've just been standing up, or I would have you stand up and stretch now. Another bonus one, but that's one you can do almost anywhere, and you can do some stretching even in a meeting or while you're driving, or you know, you can get up and take a walk at times, but stretching is something that you can do almost anywhere, almost any time. And then the fourth one, the second bonus one, is to laugh, to find some humor in your situation. To laugh at yourself and your own situation, not laugh at somebody else. Malcolm Cowley, who lived from 1898 to 1984, said, "They tell me that you'll lose your mind as you grow older. What they don't tell you is that you won't miss it very much." Now I want to tell you how to develop a strong sense of self. And this is page 4, I believe it is, in your handout, is to climb the personal power pyramid. So if you find a page that looks like a bunch of steps getting smaller, that's what we're talking about. So to get a stronger sense of yourself, you climb a pyramid. Not the pyramids in Egypt, not the ruins of Tulum, but the personal power pyramid. This, you start at the bottom and you make your way up. Emotions often get us off balance, or we get off balance when we have emotions that we don't know what to do with. And so I want to help you with that. Emotions are a lot like waves in the ocean. Anybody here been in the ocean? Been in ocean waves? Are they different than waves you might find at Chatfield Reservoir or some other place? Yes. Ocean waves come. They just come and they keep coming, and they don't ask your permission, they don't ask if you want to, they just keep coming. And emotions are like that. They just come and they just are there whether we want them there or not. Ocean waves come in different sizes, different forms, different intensities. There's fast waves, slow waves, there's big waves, little waves, there's strong waves, there's kind of weak waves, there are undertows, there's, there's another similar word. Riptides, that's what I was trying to think of, thank you. Another thing about ocean waves is they come and then what? They go. And they go as surely as they come. And emotions are meant to be the same way. However, we get afraid of emotions. How many here were told as young children, don't feel sad, don't feel mad, don't feel. And so we get the idea that we're not supposed to feel and that we're supposed to tell ourselves what to feel. And we get confused about feelings and actions. It's okay to be angry, to feel angry. It's not okay to dump that on everyone around us. We get confused about that difference. We're afraid that if we get sad or if we feel sad, we will always feel sad and we will never feel anything else. We're afraid to let it out. We're afraid to cry because we don't think we'll ever stop once we start. And we've learned all kinds of unhelpful things about emotions when they're as natural as the waves in the ocean. And if we can learn from how to deal with waves in the ocean to how to deal with our emotions, it can help us a lot. The best way to deal with emotion or with ocean waves and emotion waves is, number one, to learn about them, to get in them. You can sit and watch them, yes, for a little bit, and learn some things. Talked to my mother on the phone this morning, and she reminded me that a month ago, she and I and my brother and his daughter were in Hawaii. We had gone there to take my father's ashes to spread them in the ocean there, because that was one of his favorite places on this earth. Water was his element. All kinds of stories from his childhood involved water. Well, water is not my element. I feel off balance around in on water very easily. So I was pushing the limits of my comfort zone a lot on that trip. And one of the things I did, well, when we went out to take his ashes, I rowed in a boat, and I actually had my niece take a picture of me sitting on the edge of the boat so I could prove to the rest of the family I really did this. I'm really here. One of the things was to get in the waves. My brother is a surfer. Water is one of his elements as well. He had lived in Hawaii for a number of years. And when he lived there, he learned how to surf. So here's this 57-year-old guy surfing. Okay, so he would walk along the beach and he would watch the waves so he would know what's going on with the waves so he could handle them better once he got in to surf. I don't know enough about waves. I could watch the waves all day long and they wouldn't tell me a thing. Why? Because I don't have the experience with them that he has. I don't have the knowledge of them that he has. So with the ocean waves, with our emotions, it's helpful to learn about them, to experience, to get in them. And yes, I did that too. I got in them on a beach with kind of slow, gentle waves so that you could hardly tell that there were waves. And then I got in them on a beach with bigger waves. And you know what? The bigger waves were more fun, even for a novice, uncomfortable in the water like me. I got bored with the little ones pretty fast. And sometimes we have to start small and get big, or get bigger. So we don't fight them. What happens if you fight an ocean wave? You get knocked off your feet really fast, don't you? Same thing that happens if we fight our emotions. If we throw ourselves on our emotion like they're a hand grenade, what are they going to do but explode all over us? If we stop fighting them, we discover they come and they go. What do we resist persists, very much holds true with emotions. We learn their rhythm, we learn how to read them and how to go with their flow. Moving up the pyramid to the next box on your pyramid, we're going to start at the bottom and go up. Here's how, or one way anyway, to learn more about your emotions. Identify them. How am I feeling? What emotion am I feeling right now? Am I sad, mad, glad? What? What am I feeling? Identify all the things, and these are just a few. I mean, there's just an unending list of emotions that we could be feeling. Usually it's lots of them that we're feeling at any given time. And then go to the other side of the box, number one there also. What events or circumstances are your emotions connected to? There's often a correlation. There's often something happening in life. Yes, there's some emotions that just come, like the waves in the ocean, but waves in the ocean respond to the weather, things that happen out there in the ocean, on the ocean floor. They respond to the moon. They respond to all kinds of things. Our emotions respond to all kinds of things that happen in life. And it can be very helpful to identify what is it that's going on. When we identify the emotion, it's helpful to tune in. Are we fighting it? Stop fighting it. Release it. Let it go. And then think about, here it says quantify your emotion, which is an oxymoron kind of, but it's really, how big is this wave? On some beaches in California, they have flags that they put out on the beach. Some days there's green flags, some days yellow flags, some days red flags, some days black flags. Maybe we need flags in our life, you know? This is a green flag day, small waves today. This is a yellow flag, caution, riptide day. This is a red flag day, stay away. Arms distance, you know, don't get any closer than that. How big is this wave? How big are the waves of emotion that we're experiencing? And how intense? What's the nature of this wave? Is this fast and strong, slow and easy? What's the nature of it? And then it can be very, very helpful to ask ourselves, because this is all inside, an introspective process. Does this wave match the event that it's connected to? Or have I got a tidal wave going here and it's a little tiny thing that happened? What's with that? Or does everybody else around me telling me I'm overreacting, but I don't feel like I'm overreacting? Well, when the size or the intensity of the wave does not match what's going on, that is a clue that likely that there's something else that we're reacting to, that there's old stuff. David Viscott, the psychiatrist who wrote the book Emotional Resilience, calls this toxic nostalgia. That is, it feels toxic, and there's a pull to the past in it. And that can be very helpful to identify and to separate out, what am I responding to here? How much of my response is about right here and right now, what's going on between you and me and here and now, and how much of it is something else, somewhere else in time and space. That can really help me to know, what do I need to do inside of me to balance myself again, to regulate this, to get myself coping well? What coping skills can I use? After we answer that question inside, then we can get to, what do I need to do with this out there? One of the reasons that we are so afraid of emotions is that we've been around people who feel something and do something. They don't take the time to go through this step by step, and it really doesn't take very long once you get used to it and get skilled at it, but we're used to people that do knee-jerk reactions. And we've gotten burned, we've gotten hurt early in our lives often by people who do that. So we get afraid of other people's emotions, we get afraid of our own emotions. But if we take the time, take a half a step back, ask ourselves, what am I feeling? What is it connected to? How big is it? What kind of a wave is this? What's going on? Does it match? What do I need to do inside me? Do I need to take a couple deep breaths and stretch and I'm good? Or do I need more? What do I need to help myself with this, to balance myself? Or is there something else out there in the world that I need to do? That can instruct us then, or lead us to, what do I need? We don't know what we need until we know what we feel and what's going on, and we know all these other things that we've just talked about. And what are our boundaries? What are our limits? How far can I go with this, or what am I going to take about this, or what kind of fences do I have or need to have about this? Knowing that can give us a sense of predictability, that when things happen in life, we know how we're going to react, we know how we'll respond, what's going to happen inside of us. That leads to a strong sense of self and a knowledge about ourselves that helps us to feel strong on the inside. Sometimes we get emotions that are so big or so pervasive that they are like a tidal wave, that they are so big that we just don't know what to do with them. And particularly with those kind or size of emotions, it can be, but not only with them, but it can be very helpful to make a container, a symbolic container, to put them in. And again, we're talking metaphor, we're talking symbolism here. We're talking like the bicycle is a three-dimensional concrete metaphor that helps capture our imagination and helps our imagination get to work to help us learn how to balance our lives. Many times it's helpful to make something that is a metaphor for what we want to do with our emotions. In our culture, we do this a lot by making memorials for different kinds of things. There's Columbine memorials, there's war memorials, there's disaster memorials. Usually it's when we have difficult, painful emotions that are bigger than we know how to deal with that we do these kinds of things. But any kind of, it can work with any kind of thing. It doesn't have to be a, quote, bad or painful thing. We can use this to help when we have a question or a dilemma that we're facing in our life, as well as a painful something that we've dealt with. What it does is it helps to activate the imagination. People also do this instinctively in many ways. People make quilts for special occasions. People make things as gifts for one another. We make things to commemorate graduations and weddings and all kinds of events as well. Our imaginations are more powerful and more important. In fact, Albert Einstein said, imagination is more important than facts. Or I've heard that quote two ways. The other one is imagination is more important than knowledge. So we need to do things, or it can be very helpful to do things, to activate our imaginations. People's growth is often stuck because all we see in life is what's in front of our nose, and we see things one way, and it's like we can't get off the railroad track that we're on, or we're boxed in some way. Our thinking is limited. And we don't notice anything that doesn't fit in the pattern of thinking that we're in. So art of various kinds, arts and crafts, as it were, enables us to find ourselves and to lose ourselves at the same time. Imagination is stronger than will. And when these are in conflict, imagination will win every time. So it's important to find ways that will enlist our imagination in helping us cope with life, help us get to where we want to go in life. Since we're talking about balance, that will help us balance our lives. Many of us already do many things in trying to balance our lives. Along the creative pursuits, there's many arts and crafts. There's gardening, painting, quilting, drawing, writing, pottery, I mean, you name it. Jewelry making, woodworking, cooking, yes. Many, many kinds of creative pursuits that can help us do that. That, again, takes more thought than we're used to putting into this. Typically, when we have emotions that we don't want to have, what do?
We stuff it.
We reach for some food. We reach for something to drink. We reach for something to smoke. We reach for something to put in our mouths. By the way, that started in infancy. You can blame God for that one. Food and comfort are connected from birth. But that's what we instinctively do. We also shop, spend. Some of us exercise. Some of us watch TV. We try to numb. There's many, many ways we try to numb ourselves. Work, read, gamble, have sex, talk, play. Play video games. Some of these are helpful. Some of these are helpful in the short term and very unhelpful in the long term. Some of these bite us on the backside. it is very helpful to identify what are my default, what do I just do without even thinking, and realize later I've done it. And to ask ourselves, how helpful is this? Is this something that I would do better to, again, put a little more thought into, put a little more reflection and planning into, and again, stop, look, listen, what's going on, and make some active choices about it.